Hello and welcome back to another episode of Offensively Offensive. My name is Sean D. With me as always is Tom Turner and our resident internet ghost, Nate Schuhaus-Murr, who's joining us for the first time this year. What's up, NSB? How are you?
Good. Glad to be back. Scheduling's been an issue, but glad we can get it going this week.
What have you been up to in the non-conference and offseason?
Not much. Just following the team. Obviously off to a pretty good start, 14-4, but we'll get more into that as we go on. Not a whole ton.
And then, of course, as always, Tom Turner, the only person from this podcast that actually lives and is active in Ames. What's up?
Not much. Last weekend took a lot of years off my life, sports-wise. Creighton, triple overtime, Iowa State, and the Packers. That was not fun.
Yeah, Packers game was rough. Yeah,
Packers game was not so bad.
Yeah. Good thing that's not the podcast for that. So we can save that for what do you like the cheat? I'm sure there's some Cheesehead podcast somewhere that you guys are part of. Wait, because NSB, you're a Packers guy too, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, but we actually don't have a Packers podcast.
Hey, you can cheat that up if you want.
Yeah, because Schuster's a Packers fan too.
Oh, I'm the odd man out. Yeah, being Steelers.
You are. Fans.
All right, so Iowa State beats TCU in Fort Worth this past Saturday. We'll just jump right into it. 73-72, and a game that Iowa State controlled pretty handily for the most part, extending out some pretty large leads throughout the game, turning TCU over an astounding 26 times, I believe. Yeah, 26 times, which I believe was 8 more than TCU's previous high this year. So Iowa State dominated from start to almost finish. We have some issues there in the last 4 minutes of the game. But obviously without Taman Lipsey, a great showing all around from the Cyclones, who were led by Keyshawn Gilbert, who had 20 points, and Curtis Jones, who was filling in for Taman Lipsey, who had 17. So I'll just kind of turn myself off for a little bit. NSB, you haven't been on the pod for a little while. I'm just going to shut up and let you talk for a little bit about what you thought about the game.
All right, yeah. Obviously, great start. Starting off, ton of turnovers. TCU had, 9 turnovers in the first, 5 minutes of the game, something like that. Got out in transition. Feel like they were just running really well, where we score well in transition. Fast break points, causing chaos. It was really good to see. I did not think Iowa State stood much of a chance in this game once we knew that Lipsey was going to be out. Not that Iowa State's not a good team, but TCU is just really good, really fast. I just felt like at TCU, there was not going to be much we could do in the half court. Obviously, I was like, who's going to step up? Curtis Jones hasn't been fantastic against great competition this year. Gilbert kind of has a habit of speeding up a little too much, but those guys both came out and did what they needed to do. I felt like a lot of guys stepped up really well. Curtis Jones obviously played some of the point. Gilbert gave him some really good minutes. Pav did really good. I think he had 10 minutes. Damarian Watson, I think, made some amazing winning plays. Just his defense and rebounding alone, the dude had 5 offensive rebounds or something like that for a guy who's a little undersized. To be crashing the boards like that is pretty crazy. Obviously, Hassan Ward did his usual thing with a few steals and dunks, which was awesome to see. So I just really like that everyone stepped up for Lipsey. It's hard to do when your best player's out. I think he leads us in points, rebounds, and assists per game, or did before that game. So when you're missing that guy, especially when he's the point guard, it's hard to really make up for it. But, they did what they needed to get it done.
Tom, care to add?
Yeah, it was a great game. Obviously, the choke at the end, we were able to hang on, which I think that maybe tells us a little bit about this team more than last year, a little bit with the guard play as well. Gilbert and Curtis stood out to me, and I think it's a little different than what everybody else is thinking. Gilbert really was struggling from the three-point line and just jumpers off the dribble, and he went 2 of 6 from three, which I love. Curtis made a couple threes as well, and that's what I just like from these guys, just to keep shooting, because it's just going to open up lanes and especially let Taman to go downhill where he's very effective. So that's more from my front. Like, if they're missing 2 of 9, then we need to tell them to stop shooting a little bit, but 2 of 6 is fine. Like, we shot 33% and so did TCU. So, and we just scored off the turnovers, which we're going to turn people over, but it depends if we can score off of them. And especially without our point guard on these fast breaks, when we get the ball from them, it was important that we scored, and we did so. And that's why we had that big lead at one point in the game.
So from a turnovers perspective, obviously this isn't even the most turnovers Iowa State has forced this year. They turned Prairie View over 29 times versus the 26 against TCU, which I thought was interesting. Iowa State's guards just felt like they were leaps and bounds better than TCU's, which I think is kind of the first time all year that you've seen it against a team where I think we're all a little weary of, and I think I can't speak for you guys, but I kind of just assumed we were going to lose, especially since the TCU was out. It felt like the first time that we had kind of imposed our will against a team that's pretty talented, right? You've got Avery Anderson and then Jameer Nelson's kid, who are both great, but turned them over a bunch. I thought they played well. One stat that I do want to bring up real quick is Iowa State is turning people over a lot, obviously, and we're just playing around with the game logs on B-ball reference. Iowa State is undefeated this year when they have turned teams over 16 times or more. And when we have done it 15 times or less, we are only 1-4. So all of our losses responsible are when we aren't turning teams over at a usual clip.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy. I mean, I feel like we just create chaos, and that's kind of our recipe. I feel like we've kind of gotten used to it under odds, but the past two teams just do it so religiously. And this team, I think, leads the country in forced turnovers a game or something like that. So they're close. Maybe it's turnover rate percent or something like that, but they're up there. So it's just nice to see them. Like, we're not only doing it versus like Green Bay or like Mississippi Valley State. We're doing it against these conference opponents that are good, have good offense, you know. But when you face teams like BYU who don't turn it over, we didn't force a lot of turnovers, like you said, and lost that game, got out of hand in the second half. So just shows if we want to win games, we got to force turnovers.
The first couple possessions, I think it was the second offensive set for TCU, Gilbert played great defense. There was a loose ball. He jumped on it, jump ball, and TJ was pumping his fist on the sideline. Everybody was up. And I think you could tell from that intensity right away that this was going to be a game. And that's really huge on the road, too. Like, TCU, not that great of an environment, but when you're coming out that strong without your leader point guard, I think that plays a big role.
Yep.
And I have no data to back this up except for a couple memories, but I think when your best player's out that following game, it's still a fair shot to win it, just because I think all these guys are D1 athletes. You get a little more responsibility, and you're still all playing as a team. Now, if your guy's out a couple more games, then it's kind of like, well, I went off last game, I'm going to shoot more. But I think it's the very next game. And just the way I think about it is this game with Lipsy, it was Curtis Jones, it was Ward, and it was Gilbert. They all played very well. Even Omaha got some shine too. And then I think back to 2022 when Ochai Agbaji did not play at Hilton. I thought we were going to win that game with ease. Kansas went in there, and Remy Martin played. Harris played well. All these guys came in, Christian Braun, they all did their part and they won. And Iowa State really never had the lead in that game. So I think that shows that when your star player is out, each of these guys are going to take that responsibility at an equal pace and just move forward.
So what I'm hearing you say is that if we make the Final Four, then we're praying for an injury.
Yes.
just make sure.
Yes. No, I think that's all good. I mean, we rallied around, and sometimes that's all it takes. You see it with fired coaches in sports sometimes, or, you know, injured quarterbacks in football, something like that. So it's good to see. Sometimes
dead mascot, too. Guys. Don't forget about that.
Yeah. Oh, rest in peace, Uga.
Georgia, they're going to win by a million on Wednesday. Remember that. Yep.
Forgot they had a basketball team. So one thing that I didn't want to bring up, obviously, I thought Iowa State pretty much dominated for 16 minutes. Okay, 16 minutes, Iowa State made TCU look like a middle school girls team. The last 4 minutes of the game were an abomination of sorts. So I think that we should probably talk about that here for a second. And I had actually, when I wrote my article recapping TCU and then previewing Kansas State, I went back and charted every possession in the last 4 minutes. Okay, so let's go through them, right? So it's not necessarily specific to individuals, so we won't be diving into who did what. But obviously, Iowa State was starting to run the slow it down, pace and space, or I should say just the space offense, which is we're going to send Gilbert to the top of the key. He's going to stare at his guy and put the ball between his legs a couple of times in the way for a pick and roll. Okay. We're just trying to burn clock at this time. Pretty common basketball practice, right? Wouldn't call it egregious or anything like that. Okay. So after the under four timeout, Iowa State's up 12. Okay. We go Iowa State turnover into a TCU layup. Milan comes down and misses a three, and then TCU gets a paint jumper. Iowa State turnover, TCU layup. Iowa State turnover, TCU layup. Ward misses a shot in the lane, and then TCU misses a jumper. Curtis Jones gets fouled, and then TCU has a tip in. Gilbert misses a free throw, and then TCU misses two putbacks and a three on that possession. Ward misses a free throw after he gets fouled, and then TCU makes a three, and the game ends. So from a turnover perspective, you have one, two, you have three turnovers. You have one, two missed shots, and then you have a two missed free throws. And I would argue that any one of those free throws, because considering they were still in the one and one, were you could count them as turnovers, right? Which I kind of think some people talk about the front edge of 1-1 being counted as turnover, which I think is interesting. But the end-of-game offense was so atrocious and so abhorrent. The fact that we were up 12 is only lucky that we're lucky to get out of there with a win. But on the other end, I'm like, win by one, win by 12, who cares, right?
Yeah. I care more about how it happened than the final score. If we ran good offense and just missed good shots and they got on a heater from three, I feel like you could be like, whatever. But the fact that we were throwing it to them, we just weren't running an offense, we didn't have anyone with much composure, and then they were getting, you know, not breakaway layups, but in transition layups and stuff like that. That's more of my concern. It's just hard when you don't have your best player who's your point guard. But, you know, that's somewhere where Gilbert, who's supposed to be the second point guard, or even Jones, or if you want to bring Pav in, run him at the one, someone has to have composure in that situation. And the fact that we have zero people who can go for like the last 4 minutes of the game up 12 and not turn the ball over four or five times, whatever it was, it's going to be an issue if Lipsy's out down the road, because this, I mean, that can happen any night in the Big 12. Like, we should beat K-State, but if it's a close game with 4 minutes left, are we going to turn it over eight times again? At home, you really don't know. So it'd be nice to have someone with composure that can really shut the game down when it needs to be.
I believe we talked about it in our group chat too. Our offense isn't that bad in the first 10 seconds. It's pretty good because the defense isn't necessarily set yet. They're coming back from an offensive possession. They're not worried about defense. They're worried about what just happened on offense. And we have our guy, Taman Lipsy. He has a step ahead running downhill. We have our additional back cut. That first 10 seconds is where we need to score. And when we do that, slow it down pace, those 10 seconds are gone. We're not even trying to do anything unless something's wide open. Yeah. And it's not even trying. It's just not even creating. We're taking 20 seconds of just dribbling around, going to side, not going up and down. And when you do that, you're left with 6 or 7 seconds on the shot clock. And that's how those turnovers happen that Sean listed earlier. And I think that's a major problem, especially when you're facing a team like TCU who doesn't shoot the three ball well. Still run your offense. And with TJ's defense, that's why we won the past 3 years at TCU. They do not shoot the ball well, and they turn over a lot with our pressure. So I think I don't know why I'm the only one thinking this. Like, I feel like the coaching staff should understand that if we are how good our offense is in the 10 seconds, especially this year with our guys, that we're taking that away. Not even having that in the realm of possibilities, it's basically going to be a turnover every single time.
I almost see it as running prevent defense in football, like, which I would say is a bad habit of doing. When it's coming down to the end of game or end of half and we're up a little bit, we drop what we know as our 3-3-5 and into this insane prevent, and we always give up a ton of yards or points at the end of the half or game. It's almost reverse in basketball. Like, we've run so well going fast all game, and as soon as we have a lead with a little bit of time left, we just stop it, abandon it, and it just all breaks down. So go ahead, Sean.
So one thing I will say, I like the prevent defense metaphor. I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with what we did, because, and it's easy to point to hindsight and say, well, we won the game, but let's push that aside for a second. So what we know about TCU is what Tom said, right? They're not a very good 3-point shooting team. So that's one thing. Second thing is that obviously they score a ton of points in the fast break. So if I'm Ots, right, I'm playing the numbers game, which is I'm going to shrink this game and try and strangle the life out of it to prevent TCU from getting easy runouts. Even if we know it's coming and they know it's coming, TCU is good enough that they have done it already through most of the year. So if I am playing the numbers game of, okay, if I can take my possession count from, personally, Iowa State had the ball, you know, I did my quick count, it was 9 times in the last 4 minutes. So in TCU had the ball 9 times. So if I can take a number that's usually going to be closer to, like, let's just call it 13 or 14, and now we're at 9, the numbers are telling me that it's going to play into my favor, because chances are high that we're probably going to score at least once or twice. Now, we didn't. That's the issue. Okay, Curtis Jones made those 2 free throws. Yep. But if you're just looking at it from a logical way, like, Tom, I get what you're saying, but I don't think it's that easy of a decision.
Yeah, that's definitely fair when you explain it like that. You're going with the numbers, and the numbers back up that's going to work, and it did work. And with that, I just want to, like, give a shout-out to Watson. He played so well late in that game. He blocked that 3-point attempt in the corner with about 45, 50 seconds left. That would have made it a 1-point game. And with our free throw shooting, that's very scary. And then later in the game, he was able to tip the ball up and waste multiple seconds, fight for a rebound, and eventually Hassan Ward got the ball. And it's just stuff like that. That last year, like at Texas Tech, for example, that doesn't happen. And that led to us losing in horrific fashion.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of thinking about when that game started, like, getting closer and closer. I was like, this is like Tech last year. I mean, Lipsy played in that game, but he had his first, like, I don't want to call it the yips, but he turned it over like 8 times in the second half or something like that. Just kept giving the ball to Tech, and it just – he was a freshman. It happens. They trapped a lot, and we had no one else that could dribble. Like, Groh couldn't dribble. Coucher couldn't really dribble, not well. So, yeah, I was thinking about the Tech game too, but it was nice to come in here and win a game like that. But yeah, Watson, the last few seconds, I need to go back and rewatch it, but it seemed like, was it Ward in there with him, didn't want to foul out, and Watson was contesting every shot when it spun out like 6 times. I don't know how that happened or whatever before we got the last foul, but he just kept making winning plays. I mean, the dude all night was just doing the small stuff, like, I know it's a football metaphor, but he was winning in the margins on the basketball court, just doing all the small stuff to really push us over the edge. Stuff that we don't always see from the football team when we went winning in the margins. But he really embraced that. He played 25 minutes, which I would assume is a season high, unless it was against a really bad opponent early in the year. But yeah, I'm with Tom. He played some fantastic minutes.
What did you all like? Okay, so from aside from the obvious with the turnovers and the chaos on defense, what else did you guys like from this game?
In the first half, it seemed like we were running a real half-court offense. I mean, the ball movement was there. We were getting some set shots from Milan. There was some good stuff to Ward. Pav seemed to get some – he got some shots up. He made a 3. I don't remember. I think that was first half. We seemed to move it really well. When teams make adjustments on us, we seem to don't have a backup plan. It's like on offense. It's like, okay, here's our plan A till halftime. When they adjust at halftime, we kind of seem to get stagnant. So I really liked – not really. I liked – our offense seemed better, especially without Lipsy in the half court in the first half than it did in the second. So I liked that.
I thought with this team – they stepped into the roles well. Gilbert and Curtis Jones both had 4 assists, and I don't think you see many games where they both have 4 assists with Lipsy. So with him out, they understood the assignment and what to do, and I think that shows a lot of growth and what this team can do later in the season with guys like that.
Yeah, I think it's a good – I think you nailed it. I think it's a good – you call it a team win. Such a cliche, but it's a good team win, right?
Omaha.
Right, that's what I was just going to say. So we had an Omaha sighting. He only played 6 minutes. He had 4 points on 2 of 2 shooting.
2 of 2.
Right? Yep. Right? Yeah, 2 of 2. Misses one free throw chance after he got an and-one. But I thought he – what did you guys think? I thought that he looked fine. He still – you saw a lot of the same stuff that we saw throughout the beginning part of the year, which he looked a little shaky and deer in headlights at times. But I thought he looked a little more comfortable than he had previously.
I thought he gave him good minutes. I mean, we got in a little foul trouble there for a minute. I know they didn't – I don't know if it was a defensive thing, but they did not want to play Milan towards the second part of that first half. He sat a majority of that when Omaha went in. So they gave him some good minutes there. I thought they just wanted to make sure that, you know, they have some defense in the post because TCU can't shoot the three that great except for a few guys. And they wanted a little more physicality in the post when Milan's more of a wing. So I feel like he gave him good minutes, did what he was asked to do in that small amount of time. You can tell it's not all there yet. I mean, it's still pretty fast for him. He on defense seems to not lose his assignment, but almost help too far a lot. But he's so athletic that he has more room for error there than someone that like Milan does to get back. So, but I liked what I saw from him overall.
I thought the offense was fun to see with a guy like him who has barely played, especially after facing all those scrub teams. I think he could have just went baseline to baseline and just passed the ball out as soon as he got it. But instead, I know he was in the dunker spot and they were pretty easy shots, but he finished through contact one time and another time he made the basket without even like hesitating. And I think that shows growth for him too. Now we are in late January, so you are expecting that from a top 20 prospect, but it was very glad to see that he's starting to put the pieces together, because if he's not, then that is a different conversation.
One thing too about our offense is that I feel like we're very guard heavy, and then otherwise it is like you're right, like otherwise we have guys in the dunker spot rolling. So like I would be, and this is super random, I would be curious to know what TJ would do if we had a super athletic center that was skilled, right? So think about like a Hunter Dickinson type. Like I'm curious, like, what would he just be running baseline to baseline, like you said, and just be doing our normal offense, which is we're going to have try and get one of our guards downhill, we're running middle pick and roll and kind of see what happens? Or do you think that that would look different? Because I honestly don't know.
From everything we've heard, especially a lot from like Chris Williams at Cyclone Fanatic, he adjusts to his players really well. Like, he's going to do what they do well. Like, obviously, our pace last year was super slow. And this year, it's our pace is a little faster. So I would like to think that he would adjust and, you know, to what his skill set is. I feel like that's one of his best qualities, is he's not someone who is like, obviously we run our defense, but on offense, he's someone who's going to adjust the players he has. He's not like a Tony Bennett at Virginia kind of guy who you're going to slow it down no matter what. We're going to run it this way. Like, no matter what, we're not going to speed up, we're going to go slow, waste time kind of thing. He seems to adjust pretty well. So, yeah, I think we're recruiting a few guys right now that are athletic centers. I sent Tom a DM the other day, one of them, Kai Rogers. He's kind of an athletic guy that we're after right now. So he had like a triple-double blocks. I think he had like 11 points, 11 rebounds, and 10 blocks or something like that. So, you know, the more modern basketball we get into, the more those centers become a regular, like a lot of these guys can shoot and stuff. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we do in the future.
I wish we had a Hunter Dickinson or just something like that. Cause like you're seeing it in the NBA now, Karl-Anthony Towns just dropped 60, Embiid dropped 70. Jokic has just won the finals. A post can dominate basketball, but you need the guards to pass it to them. And a perfect example is, I'm going to go the sicko mode, is with that Auburn team with Jabari Smith. Jabari Smith was amazing for that team, but those guards had poop for brains and they never passed him the ball. And that's why they lost in the second round of Miami. So when you have guards who can pass to the post and get him in a good position where he's not out of position and can't shoot or dribble and just has to pass it back out and just regroup down low, it makes such a difference. And who knows? Hey, JT Rock could be that guy in 3 years, maybe, hopefully, praying.
Yeah, in 3 years after he does nothing but eats soap bars full of protein. And literally, they need to lock him in seasons and make him eat his way out of there. And then once he's done, the only other place he's allowed to go is the freaking weight room. That's it.
Yeah.
I love that
guy. And you see him on the end of the bench because he's so much taller than everyone. Like, Conrad's not a small guy, but JT Rock is just like, head and shoulders above everyone. So hopefully they're making good progress there. But yeah, he could use the redshirt year.
He looks like a giraffe. I'm just going to say it.
Yeah.
One other thing before we move on to K-State, I actually did think Milan played really well, even if he wasn't kind of in his bag as he normally does. One thing I did notice in a note that I had from watching the game, I wasn't actually able to watch the game live on Saturday, but I went back and rewatched it yesterday. His footwork is unbelievable. Like, yeah, if you just watch the way that he sets up to the ball, the way he catches, the way that he pivots, the way that he spins and turns, it's absolutely gorgeous. His first or second shot, I can't remember which one it was. He had basically the same turnaround jumper that he did against Houston, right? From the same spot in the short corner, that kind of thing. And I watched him do that. And then I watched him do it again a couple more times throughout the first half. And he's so consistent at it. And he's an offensive weapon. He only had 11 points or whatever it was. It wasn't his best game by any means, or 10 points. Yeah, 4 of 11 shooting. So it wasn't his best game shooting the ball. But even the threat of having him out there is enough to make defenses think about it. And that's someone that we have not had in the Otzelberger era so far. Like, say what you want about Tyrese and all that stuff like that. He's never that good. No. Cal Sherry was so too up and down. It didn't matter. Holmes obviously could put it together every once in a while, but it wasn't enough. Like, Milan on offense has been a game changer. And obviously we're up to the top. We're almost at the top 50 in terms of offensive efficiency. So, I mean, it's clearly shown the tempo's increased and things look a lot healthier.
Yeah, I mean, he's looked fantastic. He's not the footwork makes up because he's not the fastest guy in the world. Like, his movements are just slow. It almost looks like he has cylinder, like blocks, cement on his feet at points when he's running. He had a breakaway and ended up getting fouled or caught or something from behind, which is funny. But his footwork is second to none. I mean, he literally, I know everyone says it and it's overblown, but he literally looks like a Nowitzki out there when he turns around and shoots that shot every time. And you always think it's going in. Like, every time he shoots it, it just looks pure. So, yeah, this footwork's been amazing. He's been a spot to open other guys up. You notice they've started double-teaming him in the post, which obviously frees someone up. So, yeah, it's been awesome to see. Space the floor a little more.
Yeah, I would love if we would throw it to him at the high post and then we would cut. Backdoor cut every single time off of that, but that just doesn't exist in this offense. So, I mean, I'm going to keep saying it until it happens because it will work, but it's maybe we're saving it for Wednesday.
Right.
Yeah. We get kind of stuck in our ways. Like, that's what we're just talking about, right? It's like, all right, it's a middle pick and roll or it's nothing for the most part, right? That's our break. Yeah. The less he dribbles, the better. I like it when they put him in like mismatches. Like, the short corner stuff is good, high post is good. Like, we don't need to put him on the block, so to speak, but I love those tweener areas for him.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so let's move on and start to talk about Kansas State, the game that's going on tomorrow at Hilton. Kansas State is currently sitting at 14-4. They are tied atop the top of the Big 12 right now, along with Texas Tech. They are currently 56th in KenPom, 129th in defense, and 23rd. Or 129th in offense and 23rd in defense. What do we like or dislike about this matchup with Kansas State tomorrow?
I really like our defense versus their offense. Their offense seems to be I couldn't tell you what their – it's five out most of the time, but I can't tell you what their end goal is when I've watched them this year. It just seems to be a lot of, like, I feel like I'm watching a middle school AAU team, and they're still a good team. I'm not trying to like completely shit on them or anything, but there just seems to be no goal. Like, you can at least, I would say it's not great offense, but you know what their goal is, like the pick and roll, get guards downhill. I can't tell you what K-State's goal is on offense besides five out, I guess, try to loop the ball around until someone's open and shoot it. But there's a reason they're, what'd you say, 129th in offensive efficiency or something like that. So I really like our defense versus that. We'll see how it goes because I don't know how well they shoot the three ball overall, but obviously we have an issue defending it. We're not great at defending it, so we'll see how that goes. But if they don't run anything in the post, I feel like it's a lot easier to defend the three because we're not doubling in the post, and that's what leads to open threes. So I like the matchup, but I feel like every time I say that, we end up losing. So
you can't see this because this is podcast form, but I'm rubbing my hands together because this game, they are frauds, first of all. And yeah, second of all, this is the perfect matchup, even better than TCU for this Iowa State defense. Kansas State offense usually lasts 17.6 seconds. That is the 200th best in NCAA. That is not good. So right off the bat, like their offense, they're working with like 13, 14 seconds left. And you do you not think Iowa State's defense is going to halt that? Like they're going to be running shots with 5 or 6 seconds left on the shot clock. They're going to get bad shots in Hilton. It's going to be ugly. And to add on to that, they don't shoot the three ball well. They don't have shooters. Tyler Perry, their point guard, is the only one. And he's not exactly smart with the ball. He's kind of chucking. He's no Marquise Noel. He's not even close. People were comparing him at the beginning of the season. No. And to one more point with that, they turn the ball over 21% of the time, 338th in the nation. That's without – all these stats are without facing Iowa State's defense, who's coming off a career high in turnovers. Like, I don't know. I'm interested to see what the line comes out with Vegas because I just want to see how they value their offense and our defense.
Tyler Perry has been – I was going to say one quick thing. Tyler Perry's been good in the clutch, but he has not been that great outside of the last few minutes of the game. His field goal percentage, I looked earlier, was at like 33.7%. I know he shoots a lot of threes, but overall that field goal percentage is horrendous. So – force them into bad shots, like you said, force them into turnovers. They turn it over a lot, and I feel like we'll have success. But go ahead, Sean.
There, I was nodding vigorously through everything Tom was saying because that's what I had looked at too. So it's a case of Iowa State's greatest strength being Kansas State's greatest weakness. What could go wrong, right? One thing I do want to point out too, I won't rehash, Tom, everything you said, but I do agree with it. They've actually taken four teams to overtime this year, and they've won all of them, which is bizarre.
Tang has never lost in overtime at K-State. He's like 10-0 in overtime.
That's a fun stat. Yeah, so they barely squeaked by Providence in November, and then they went through this really weird stretch where they took Oral Roberts in North Alabama on back-to-back games to overtime. They won both of them, and then the third straight game of that stretch, they beat Villanova in overtime, which was a solid win at home. And then they beat Baylor at home in OT 2 games ago. So they're squeaking by nobody's, right? Like they probably should have lost.
I think they beat Oklahoma State by 4. They won like 70-66 or something like that. It was something. Yeah.
They are only projected via KenPom to win 2 more games in the Big 12. They're only favored in 2 games the rest of the year, according to KenPom. And Tom, to answer your question, we are currently, based on KenPom, 9-point favorites, which the line is almost usually similar to that.
That is interesting. And I will say one of Kansas State's guards, Cam Carter, had like a career high day last year at Iowa State. I feel like that's something to watch just because maybe it's, you know, same gym, same energy kind of thing. And then also, I'm 90% sure Kansas State has a freshman with the last name Ames. So that feels like he's going to drop 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not.
And he's gone now. He's at Georgetown, but they had a transfer name. Was it Ish Masood? Was that his name?
Yeah.
A sniper from three, and he hit like 6 last year at Iowa State. The dude just cannot miss from three.
And this is without even mentioning Naquan Tomlin, too.
Yes. Yeah, and he's gone now. He's at Memphis. They had a whole shit show with their president and AD and everything, but I think that'd be a better squad with him. Tomlin is a legit NBA prospect. It sucks that he's gone, but I'm not sad that we don't have to face him. The other thing I'd really be worried about is not having Lipsy, and their defense is definitely not bad. So if they can force Gilbert and Jones into turning it over a lot, you know, they can probably keep it closer, maybe even win the game. But if everything goes how it's supposed to, hopefully, even if Lipsy isn't his normal self, just having his ball control presence on the floor would do a lot for this team.
So, Tom, I want to call on you here for a second because there's one name that we haven't mentioned on K-State, and I know that you're a Creighton fan, so why don't you talk us through Arthur Kaluma?
As I'm wearing my Blue Jay sweatshirt right now, Kaluma is an interesting matchup. like, I don't know how fast Trey King is, but I think he can stay with him. Kaluma, it's a lot in up and downs and pump fakes. He plays a lot like Siakam, who is now on the Pacers with Tyrese Haliburton. His game is super similar. He shoots the three ball okay, but he has to be like going into his motion. It's just not a like, it's got to be a step into three. I personally think he is the best player, not Perry or not Cam Carter on this team. But with Iowa State's defense, it's really tough for a power forward to get their game going with the way we play on that side of the ball. So I'm the only really thing I'm worried about, because I think we smacked this team, is this a look ahead spot? We play Kansas CBS 12:30 Saturday. That's what I'm worried about.
It's very possible. Not to get too far ahead, but I like how we match up with that Kansas team too. Their bench scored 2 points last night against Cincinnati, and they won by 574-69, I believe. Yeah, not to get too far ahead, but I like that matchup too. Could be a really fun week in Ames.
Analytically speaking, I think it's Bill Self's worst team by a pretty wide margin, I guess, at this point. Because the numbers do not like Kansas.
No.
It's just a weird makeup of a team.
Very odd.
It's also not fair. They're getting 2 extra days rest for Saturday's game because they played on Monday and we're playing on Wednesday. We're focused on K-State. I'm focused on K-State. Revenge game for me against Kaluma for leaving Creighton.
What else in terms of K-State? So we kind of talked about their fraud sass a little bit. I still can't get over that they took Oral Roberts and North Alabama to OT.
They seem to play to their competition level a lot, which like could be not great for us, but they beat Baylor, and I think Baylor's not as great as they're made out to be right now, but they're still a good team. Like, Scott Drew's a good coach, obviously. Tang is undefeated against him, I think, since he left. I think he beat him twice last year, so maybe he's had his number, but, man, they play all these games close, no matter who they're playing.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate, too, Tom, I think, mentioned it barely, but in terms of point distribution, they don't like to shoot a ton of threes, which also, I think, plays to Iowa State's strength, right? Because usually with our no middle, you know, trapping a chaos ball that we like to play, forcing turnovers, like we saw against BYU, their greatest strength was spreading the floor and just shooting from deep, okay? That's a horrendous matchup for us. And I honestly was a little bit surprised at the reaction in our group chat, not our small one, but our big group chat, when guys were getting upset about that game. I'm like, really? We were not going to win that game.
No.
So Kansas State doesn't like to shoot threes. They're not great at it. They're not bad at it either. They only shoot 31%, so 261st. So they are not an elite 3-point shooting team. They don't like to take those shots. We just saw the same thing happen with TCU. Not a good 3-point shooting team. Don't like to take a lot of threes. How that worked out for them. So I'm trying not to get ahead of myself here in terms of what the numbers are telling us. But on paper, it's very, very favorable for Iowa State.
It is. Yeah, I agree with you. The only thing I can think of is them trying to take advantage of a mismatch of us not, you know, guarding the three very well, but I don't see them putting in 12 threes on Wednesday night. I just don't. Like, if they're going to want to take them, let them. Those are obviously, they're not great at it, 31%. If they get hot, you just kind of live with it, I feel like. I mean, if that team's going to catch fire, they're going to catch fire. So, but I think we'll be fine. Turn them over a lot, get points in transition, you know, get Hilton going, and we'll be fine.
There's not a lot of matchups in this game that you could point towards Kansas State. The only one is, I think, they're top 40 on KenPom and blocking shots. So that's just something to watch. I already can see it now. Robert Jones is going to do maybe a couple hook shots and just some footwork activity down low and just get destroyed with blocks. But, yeah. I mean, blocks in play leads to offense as long as they're not blocking them out of bounds. So that's just another thing to watch for. But like I said, I just don't think – this Kansas State team, especially on the road on a Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, late game, that they really have anything that can push us to our limits. And I think that's with or without Taman Lipsey.
Yeah.
Yep. I think we're in agreement there. I think that's it for Kansas State. What else is on your guys' mind recently? I will tell you something that I found here. when I was doing this preview the other day was Iowa State is inching closer towards that 40 and 40 metric in KenPom, meaning that they're a national title contender. So they're currently 53rd in offense and what, second or third in defense?
Second, so, yeah, I think in total defense, yeah.
So if Iowa State can jump into the top 40 in offense pre-tournament, then that would technically classify them as a potential contender to win the national championship. The stat is quite literally perfect since all of these metrics have been invented going all the way back to 2002. So the only other, and the only question I have for you guys is, can you name the team with the highest metric that ended up winning the national championship? And I will narrow down to the last 10 years.
You said highest metric, like closest to 40 and 40 or closest to 1-1?
Closest to 40 and 40.
Baylor.
Oh. Virginia.
One more chance each.
I don't know.
Wasn't them.
Villanova?
Ooh.
No.
This is a good question.
My only other guess would be Kansas, but there's Argo Camp.
Nope. It'd be UConn 2014.
Really? Oh. They're that good defensively? Come on.
Yeah, no. They were 10th in defense and 39th in offense.
10th in defense?
Yeah.
I just like, who is Shabazz locking down?
What? That's what I'm saying. They let Dustin Hoge go off against them.
Yeah.
You're telling me they're top 10.
That's crazy. That was the last team I was going to guess. If you will let me guess all the teams, that's the last team I'm guessing.
Yeah, I would not have gotten them.
People like to remember Shabazz and what they were doing that whole run, but their defense was good pretty much all year.
Dude, I'll stand on if we had Niang, they don't win that game. I'll stand on that.
We could talk about that for an hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, all that to say is analytically, this is the best team Iowa State's had, obviously under Ots, and I would say probably for the last, 5 years.
Yeah.
Or something. Like, our offense has always been good. We've always been tilted one way or the other.
Yep.
So this is the closest team that we have seen with the margins being slimmer on offense and defense and tilting towards the top, which is exciting.
Yeah, I just hope we can keep it up through March. You know, we've seen this team in the past few years kind of slowly fade, like lose their legs almost. So I hope we can just, stay refreshed, stay healthy, stay ready to go in March.
Yeah. Ots' system, it's still so early to tell, but I think it's a little different than Tony Bennett's, where it's slow it down no matter what. Ots' is slow it down, but we're going to change if we need to, find a way to win. Yep. And I mean, it worked 1 year, Sweet 16, the defense was awesome. And then 1 year, the defense was still good. Pitt only scored 59 points. We just happened to score 41. So I think I don't like to get put out winners before the bracket comes out, because you got to see the road to get there.
Yeah.
But Iowa State, like this team, if it's 40 and 40, then we have the analytics to back us up. That's something to watch out for.
Yeah, that makes to make a good run.
And remember, too, that's just to be eligible to do it. So the better you are to the top in both, the more precise it is, right? So if you're 1-1, usually chances are high. So I think Purdue, like when you look at Purdue last year, see if I can grab it real quick. I believe that they were – so Purdue was a popular pick last year, right? They were pre-tournament 12th in offense and 24th in defense. And of the top nine, that was the highest offense or defensive metric that they had. Well, the top seven. So people were really, really high on Purdue coming into the tournament.
I was high on Arizona, and they got bounced by Princeton round one.
Arizona was they were 10th best offense and 39th defense. So they were the opposite of that 2014 UConn team.
Yeah. That's
so anyways, crazy. It's not – the stat is only foolproof post after the fact, right? So you're looking at the numbers before the tournament, and then usually it's a self-fulfilling prophecy as the tournament goes along. But it's a good way if you're filling out your bracket to help you select a couple different teams. And then from there you can say, all right, let's look at who they played and all that stuff. But fun metric to – keep an eye out for.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us at Offensively Offensive. Thank you all for listening again. We will be back next week. Go Cyclones.